Soccer show, and welcome to the red carpet of our annual awards. Yes, on today's show, we're giving out gongs for the player of the season, the transfer of the season, the story of the season, and much, much more. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today to help hand out the aforementioned gongs, to seal the envelopes, and to make sure Jose Mourinho doesn't turn up and slap anyone Will Smith style, Taylor Rockwell. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, that's why I'm going black t-shirt up top to be the bouncer, but I am wearing tuxedo pants and very shiny shoes on the bottom. You can't see them on camera, but that is what I'm wearing.
Yeah, it's spectacular. Thank you for drawing the visual picture there.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
I was trying to think of the most villainous person who would do a Will Smith slap, and Jose was the one that struck me. Struck me, literally. He struck me.
I could see that. Pep occasionally has a weird, like, violent outburst that then is followed up by weirdly, like, philosophical ramblings. So maybe him, that could be a Pep Guardiola moment. But I think Jose is probably, yeah, the most likely offender.
Yes. Keep my low XG and dull final out of your mouth. Why do I sound Russian? I don't know.
Yeah, did he become Drago there?
Anyway, joining us, a man who has bad takes on Cheesecake Factory, but is an excellent soccer award judge, Joe Lowry. Ciao, ciao. Hello.
Ciao, ciao. Hello, Ryan. So I have like 84 different questions or things to say from the first minute of this show. So First of all, Ryan, are we giving out gongs? Like the symbol-y kind of things? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, gongs, yeah. It's called the Totalies, these awards. I think I couldn't think of a better name.
Is that a real thing, or is this just like a Ryan Bailey, you know, this is us starting a trend kind of situation?
A gong is a synonym for an award, Joe. I believe that's what I was going for.
I'm learning something every day. That's what I need to know.
I think that might only exist in Ryan Bailey land, Joe Lowry. No, that's what helps.
I've stayed quiet until now. This might be a British thing, Ryan.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. We got that out of the way. Second, Taylor, I'm glad you specified that you were wearing pants, because I just sort of assumed that all of us are Winnie the Poohing it every single week. I mean, I know that I am. So that's one thing to say about that.
I prefer Donald Ducking, but go on.
Yeah. I mean, they're in the same family, I think, certainly in that cartoon sphere. And the last thing is, I like how everyone in the soccer world is just pretending as if there aren't still three major European leagues of the top five that are still going, and everybody is rolling out their end of season content this week. We are no different. The Liga and La Liga and Serie A, you are dead to us.
And also FA Cups and Champions League finals, not to mention as well, Joe. But hey, we're keeping the tent. We're slinging the tent. We're slinging the tent all around, Joe. That's all I can say. Joining us to sling that tent, if the award winner speeches go too long today, Graham Ruthven's going to start performing Toxic by Britney Spears. It's going to be like the music to hurry people up, keep things moving, Graham. Is that right?
Followed by Umbrella by Rihanna, of course. That's my routine now, as we've established.
Indeed, you use the umbrella prop to gently nudge the winners off stage, will you? Yes.
Very good. Yeah, I would like to see who presents awards, football awards ceremonies these days. Like Pedro Pinto, does he still do it? I would like to see him using an umbrella to get whoever is presenting the award off stage.
Pedro Pinto, that's a good reference. I feel like that would be maybe like 7 years ago reference, but yeah.
There was a time, believe it or not, when I used to watch these things, and now I no longer do, so I've no idea who's presenting them. It's probably Saltbay that's doing it now.
It's definitely Saltbay, yes. None of us would be able to corroborate that, because none of us probably watch those awards, Graham. Anyway, we should listen to these awards, but not before checking out patreon.com/totalsoccershow for extra content from the TSS gang. Let's get to our first award. It's a big one, Taylor. It's a big one. Player of the season. Are you going to persuade me why it's not the man who scored 52 goals in all competitions, 36 league goals, and arguably had the greatest Premier League debut season ever? Taylor, are you going to tell me?
I am. Yes. Because I'm going to try to, because I've got him in about four other categories, I think. So I have honorable mention to Harry Kane, because that is pretty much the season for Harry Kane. Is you would have been in a lot of best ofs and the like, but then Erling Haaland did Erling Haaland thing. No, I'm going to go in a very different direction. I'm going to say John Stones. That is my answer to this question.
Yes!
The evolution of John Stones from center back who maybe isn't good enough, who does still have the mod haircut for some reason, but now has become a critical central midfielder for Pep Guardiola and has been, I think, very, very vital in the way that they have evolved under Pep this season, the way the tactics have evolved, the new sort of wrinkles that have been brought in, some of them existing wrinkles from Barcelona and Bayern Munich. But I think John Stones adding aspects of his game and becoming this critical figure for that midfield, for such an all-encompassing, fully dominant midfield and overall Manchester City team, I have John Stones as my player of the season.
Ryan has never looked more smitten than he does right now.
I love it. John Stones getting deserved praise on TSS. Is this what it feels like when doves cry? It's a beautiful moment. I love it.
Oh. I'm first of all, a Prince reference is always the way to go, Ryan Bailey. So thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, it feels weird. It feels weird because...
It should feel weird, Taylor, just to be clear. It should feel like a lot weird. Yeah.
Maybe this is just me, like, not wanting to give Erling Haaland every single category. But I think Haaland has, and to his credit, he also has adapted his game and I think evolved the way he plays and made it fit with what Pep Guardiola wants of him and what his teammates want of him. But I still say John Stones becoming a linchpin midfielder is not a thing I saw happening at the beginning of the season. Erling Haaland scoring a ton of goals and being a player that no one knows how to deal with at the start of the season, that is something I saw happening.
All right, Joe, the bar has been set. John Stones for player of the season. Where do you go from here?
I will be going with Erling Haaland. I don't have him for every other category, so I want to make sure that he gets his due here, and he should, right? I don't need to make a really strong argument for this. 36 league goals, 10 Champions League goals. Should win the Ballon d'Or, if that matters. In my opinion, it doesn't really. It's probably going to be Messi either way. But, I mean, he has been the best player for the best team on the planet this season. He should probably win this award for, like, the next decade or however long he's around, because it's difficult to imagine this slowing down anytime soon. Taylor, I'm giving you a hard time about John Stones, but I do like that pick. And it is going to feel like, I would assume, we're going to hit on City and Napoli and some of these other teams over and over and over again throughout this episode. So I like the idea of spreading some of the love around. I have a couple of honorable mentions quickly. Victor Osimhen, I mentioned Napoli. I think he was the best player on maybe the most fun team this season in Napoli, and the team that won a lot of hearts along the way. 25 goals for them in league play, led them to the title in Serie A. And then my other option is Ter Stegen. And this is like the one I believe the least. But he was a top five shot stopper in Europe's top five leagues, according to FBref, saving his team more than 8 goals over the expected figure. I think you can make a real argument that he was the best player on the best team in Spain. And that should be impressive, because I didn't know if Barcelona were going to win the title this year. Real Madrid still have a ton of talent. Ter Stegen did a lot of good for them en route to winning La Liga and to having something of a resurgence under Xavi. So I don't really believe that Ter Stegen or Osimhen or really anybody else but Haaland should win this thing. But I do like them as honorable mentions.
So Joe votes fully for Ter Stegen. Got
correct.
It. Yep. Joe, one other thing on the Ter Stegen front. I believe I'm correct in saying that statistically his best season or close to it for Barcelona as well, which is not a thing I would have expected at the beginning of this campaign. So I think that is a really great shout for honorable mention. Graham, I'm excited to hear yours. I just want to say, I think we should maybe have like player of the season and not like hipster player of the season, but then like quiet player of the season. Because like, to your point about Napoli, like Frank Zumbo and Gisa also sort of on my list in an honorable mention sort of way, just because he was such a critical part of that team. I don't think he's in most people's Serie A team of this season, but every time I watch Napoli, he was so immense for that team. I want to include him, but it's hard to look past Harry Kane, Erling Haaland, John Stones, Ter Stegen, and the like.
Taylor, that is a tribute to your indecisiveness. Pick a player of the season. Pick one.
John Stones. Boom.
Okay,
done.
Good. Graham.
So I thought I was going to go full hipster here, and then John Stones came out the bag, followed by Zambo and Guisa. So I haven't quite gone that far, but I mean, I think maybe the correct answer is Erling Haaland. But careful. I'm going to put forward the case for Antoine Griezmann. So I think it's fair to say that his season didn't start so well. Remember when Atleti were only bringing him on for 30 minutes at a time because they didn't want to sign him permanently from Barcelona? Well, a lot changed since then. So he goes to the World Cup. He is, for my money, the best player at that tournament. He's playing this really interesting midfield hybrid role that we discussed a lot during that tournament. I think without him playing that role, I don't think France make the final. I think he was holding a lot of things together. They had a lot of injuries. I think that team looks very different without him. He then comes back from the World Cup, and there's absolutely no doubt in my mind he has been the best player in La Liga since then. This is the best that I have ever seen of Antoine Griezmann, and that says something because he has been very good in the past. So I'm putting forward the case for Antoine Griezmann. My honourable mentions, of course, Haaland. Martin Odegaard at Arsenal, I think, has taken two or three steps forward in his development. Osimhen, Joe, I had him in my list as well. Jude Bellingham, I think he was probably the best player in the Bundesliga over the course of the season. Then obviously Messi, when you consider his World Cup contribution. And then Harry Kane, who probably hates Erling Haaland, I would say, because he plays for the team that Harry Kane wanted to go to two summers ago, and Erling Haaland has kind of hogged the limelight in the Premier League this season. But I'm not totally convinced that 36 goals for the best team in the league is any better than 30 goals for Spurs this season, which is an outrageous achievement for Harry Kane. So I think he definitely deserves some recognition.
Very fair. All right, thank you. Let's. I guess we're giving that to Haaland by consensus, or maybe it was. Maybe let's give it to John Stones. We'll give it to John Stones because that was a great call, and I enjoy that very much. Manager of the Season is our next award. Graham, are you going to tell me why it's not Unai Emery?
Unai Emery is in my honourable mention list, but I don't have Unai Emery just because he wasn't there for the full season. Having said that, I just made the case for Antoine Griezmann and he basically sat on the bench for the first 2-3 months of the season. So hey, consistency.
Not quite but his fault. Not quite Antoine Griezmann's fault.
True.
Mr. 30 Minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's a nickname you want to avoid in life.
Hey, Luciano,
we just want to pay you a lot of money.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, true. 30 minutes. Anyway, moving on. My manager of the season is Luciano Spalletti.
30 minutes is too long.
Yep. So last summer, trying to play on here. Oh, that was a bad pun to make there. Last summer was a really difficult one for Napoli. They lost the core of their team. There were protests against De Laurentiis, the president of Napoli. The sporting director, Giantoli, he was also protested against. There was a press conference that he gave and a fan burst in and like shouted at him. So the club wasn't in good shape last summer. From that, Napoli signed Kim Min-jae, they got Kvaratskhelia, and they dominated Serie A, winning their first Scudetto since 1990. We knew from very early on that they were going to be the winners, and they did it playing this like incredible brand of attacking, dynamic, modern, high-intensity soccer that made them the most fun team to watch in Europe this season when they were on it. At a point, a lot of people thought they were going to win the Champions League as well. That's how good they were. So when I think of expectations and circumstances and also how Napoli's success will rank in history, it's Spalletti, in my opinion. Some honourable mentions, Unai Emery, Eddie Howe, Gary O'Neill. This is a very Premier League-centric list that I've got here, but it does kind of seem like a number of Premier League managers have excelled this season. Mikel Arteta as well, and then a German suggestion, Urs Fischer from Union Berlin.
You were going to give it to Mikel Arteta, but at the last minute, things went awry and you chose not to. That seems representative of Arsenal season.
Indeed, yeah, reflective.
Joe, where did you land on this one? Manager of the season.
I went exactly where Graham went on this, and he explained it better than I was planning to. The only thing I'll add is I believe there's a pet duck in the mix for Spalletti, I think he deserves credit for that. The one thing I'll say, I found this category maybe the hardest of any category, just because for me, I think it's really hard to actually express how directly or how much a manager impacts the team, right? Graham, you mentioned Spalletti in the brand of soccer that Napoli were playing. You also mentioned signing Kvaratskhelia and signing Kim Min-jae. Like, that's not Spalletti, right? That's the front office above him, or at least it's not all Spalletti. So a lot of the picture for so many of these teams, I think about Eddie Howe in Newcastle as another great example. You know, Eddie Howe is not necessarily fully involved in all of these decisions. A big part of Newcastle's rise and a big part of Napoli's success this year is them going out and spending in signing quality players. So I find this one really, really hard. I mean, do you give it to Pep Guardiola because of the style of soccer they play and how unstoppable they look right now? Maybe I went with Spalletti just because I think Napoli are a really fun story. And I think he did a good job, but it's not so easy for me to figure out how much credit these different managerial figures actually deserve.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up Biancaneve the duck as well. Snow White the duck.
I got you.
Very nice. Taylor, maybe our answer is different to this question after Man City win the treble, but manager of the season.
Sort of literally where I'm going with it, yes. I do kind of assume that they are going to win the treble, which is why I did have it as Pep Guardiola. If they don't, that does weaken the case, and maybe Spalletti is the obvious answer then. But for me, if Guardiola wins the treble, I think he is, it's awkward, maybe the greatest manager of all time at that point. Just because of how much success he has had, but how much he's evolved his style between the three clubs he's managed. And then along the way, yeah, spending a ton of money, don't get me wrong, but finding a way to make players work, finding a way to get players to do new things they had not previously done or play in positions they hadn't previously played, and creating a team that could not be beaten in the stretch run of the Premier League season. We'll see what happens in the FA Cup and the Champions League. But if they win both of those, it's hard for it to not be Pep in my mind, even with all the other successes of Spalletti, of De Zerbi, the aforementioned, and of Unai Emery, who were all on my short list.
Yeah, and Pep famously in Ted Lasso saying words to the effect of, don't worry about the wins, just make sure everyone's having a lovely time.
Sure.
Which is exactly what Pep would approach every game with, I'm quite sure.
He also then, maybe I am like misconstruing the quote, but he said something afterwards like, Ted Lasso needs me in it because I am reflective of it, or something like that. It was a very strange, like, they need people like me and Ted Lasso. And I can't tell if that was meant to be self-deprecating and sort of joking, or if he was actually being serious about how he makes Ted Lasso better.
They need people like me and Ted Lasso was a Mike Dean quote, I believe, actually.
I see. Yeah. I really enjoyed, that's a good one, Ryan. I really enjoyed when, not a spoiler, but when Ted gets to meet Pep, however that goes down, and then comes away sort of like, oh my God, I met him. That was such an amazing moment in the show this season. I did love that, and I enjoyed their enthusiasm for Pep.
Indeed. And we enjoy Graham's enthusiasm for Ted Lasso in general. Graham, we come to you because we're going to talk about goal of the season. Where was it scored and who did it?
So I've gone for a World Cup goal. By the way, we didn't really set out the parameters of this discussion. I'm allowed to pick World Cup stuff, right? That happened in the middle
no.
of the season. Oh, well, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, you're good. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So I picked a World Cup goal, and I don't necessarily think it's the best goal of the season, but my personal goal of the season was Vincent Aboubakar's scoop at the World Cup for Cameroon. I don't think I'd seen a goal like it before, and I think, Joe, maybe you and I had this discussion because I know you like the Robin van Persie goal from 2014. Yeah. And that goal is one of the most memorable goals of all time for me because I don't think I've seen a goal like it since then. It's so unique. And I think the same of the Aboubakar goal. So maybe in terms of technical execution, it's not the most aesthetically pleasing goal. But for anyone who hasn't seen it, basically he thinks he's a mile offside, and everyone thought he was a mile offside. He's through on goal, goalkeeper comes out to the edge of the box, and Aboubakar does this big scoop over the goalkeeper and it then bounces in. Then VAR shows that he's onside. It was so weird. He would never have done that if he thought he was onside. So it was kind of a product of the strange circumstances around that goal. And yeah, that's my most, I don't know if it's the best goal of the season, but it's the most memorable goal of the season for me.
Very nice. Taylor, your goal of the season?
Julio Enciso versus Chelsea. He could have a couple different entries here because he also has a lovely goal against Man City. But that goal, if you watch it, you get to see all of Chelsea's problems on display in that they cough the ball up, I think, three different times in the lead up to the goal. But the way he strikes it, the power he gets behind it, the beautiful sort of line from his foot to the back top corner, and then the way the ball sort of bounces up and down in the goal, it is an incredible strike. And I think watching it live is sort of what I went with a lot of these was, what will I remember? What are the things that first come to mind from this season? And that is a goal that, though I have no loyalty to Brighton, I think I will remember from this campaign because it was just so majestic in the moment.
Yeah, that's an excellent choice. I think it's one of the front runners for goal of the season in the less official polls than the TSS ones as well. Joe, what do you think?
Who cares about those?
Indeed.
I mean, so Taylor, I don't know if you had this problem. I had a hard time picking between the 20-plus Fellaini and Balogun goals. Like, I spent a long time watching. Mm-hmm. I mean, how are you supposed to pick one, right?
It's I assumed you would just pick all of them and then run us through every single one.
Well, and then the problem was Gio Reyna scored a bunch of goals this year, even though he didn't really play. It just got really complicated for me really fast. So I want everyone to understand that those are the real goals of the season. But the one that I'll say to appease the people, to give one specific answer, is Pedro Gonçalves for Sporting against Arsenal in the Europa League. Gets the ball, takes a touch forward, basically just at the edge of the center circle towards Arsenal's side. So he's in the attacking half, but just at the edge of that center circle and chips Aaron Ramsdale. It's made even better by the fact that it's not Matt Turner in goal. That would get this knocked down a rung or two. But chips Aaron Ramsdale, and it is a beautiful strike. It is not objectively as good as the goal that Graham picked, because that goal was awesome, and I've seen chips like this before, but I mean, you don't see this stuff a lot, and I really like the finish. It's incredibly clever from Gonçalves, and I don't know, made me happy. Made me happy that he scored that goal. I liked it. It's my goal of the season.
Right. Two quick things from me. One, there are protests on the streets of Porto because Joe is praising Sporting Lisbon.
It's all part of the
plan. Number two,
Sporting
Club of
Portugal.
Don't
worry.
Excuse me.
Don't worry.
And number two, does anyone wonder if like if Joe's wife or parents, if they need to get his attention, if he's just sort of like off in his own world, if they just say Balogun goal? Do you think that just pulls him back? Like, is that all you have to say to get Joe's attention?
It is, yeah, actually, which is kind of concerning. But I've been Pavloved in that way of that's all it takes for me to respond.
Balogun's dog. Very nice indeed. John Stone's got two goals this season, Taylor, just saying. And we haven't mentioned either of those, but we'll keep mentioning him as much as we can.
I can only mention him, but so much.
I don't know. There's no limit to my appreciation for his oeuvre. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, more awards back shortly. Total Soccer Show, welcome back. We are heading to the category of Overachiever of the Season. And this, Joe, relates to a specific team.
I've got Union Berlin as my overachiever of the season, the team that did best relative to expectations. I think there's a lot of good potential nominations for this. Even a club like Arsenal, I think, deserve credit in this category for being on top of the Premier League for as long as they were, for qualifying for the Champions League, all that stuff. But it's just way more impressive for Union Berlin to do it. So to give a little bit of background here, Grant mentioned Urs Fischer earlier, their manager. This is their first time ever in the UEFA Champions League, or will be next season with them finishing fourth in the Bundesliga. It's only their fourth season in Bundesliga, period. Like, this is the fourth year they've ever been in the Bundesliga. They were founded in 1906. They've become one of the only teams from what was East Germany to ever rise to the Bundesliga level. As recently as 2004, they were relegated to the third tier in a basically crumbling stadium and in financial trouble. And the story of kind of how they stabilize, I think, is awesome and fits kind of with what Graham and Ryan talk about when they talk about club ownership, or at least, you know, club operations. It's the fans volunteering to renovate the stadium. Fans kept the club alive, essentially, and gave them some sort of stability, something of an asset. 2009, they get back to the second Bundesliga, all while sort of having to watch RB Leipzig rise up in the years after that, while they still struggled and couldn't make it to the top. Then they make it to the Bundesliga. Then this year they make it to the Champions League, all while spending some of the lowest on wages in the Bundesliga. I think this is a fantastic season. Not that they hadn't had some success in recent years, to be clear. They finished 7th and 5th in the last couple of seasons in the Bundesliga. So, like, very respectable totals from them. But this is an entirely new level, again, for a club that doesn't, from what I can find, spend at the level on wages as a club like Dortmund or Leipzig or Bayern or Leverkusen. Like, they're not this giant club in the Bundesliga. And yet, they finished among those giants this year. I mean, it is... This is, along with Napoli, along with maybe a couple others, for me, one of the best stories of the season.
Good nomination, Joe. Graham, I'm hoping you're going to mention the word Luton Town at some point during your answer. Luton, of course, non-league 9 years ago, who have come up to the Premier League for next season, whose stadium holds 10,000 people, and it is, you know, half the seats are in people's backyards, etc. and so on. Very impressive.
They're my answer. Yeah, Luton Town was my overachiever of the season. They had the 8th lowest wage bill in the Championship this season. The estimated transfer value of their squad is £30 million. I know Joe loves transfer market values, but hey, that's all I've got to work with here. Watford, to provide some context, they have a value of £120 million. And it wasn't like Luton got lucky in the playoffs either. They finished third in the table as well. And they lost their manager midway through the season. So it's an incredible story that they will be in the Premier League next season. Union Berlin is a very, very good shout. It was between Luton and Union Berlin for my pick. I also had Rayo Vallecano in La Liga. Antonio Areola is a very good manager. He's leaving the club at the end of the season. I think he'll be in the Premier League at some point next year. Lons in Ligue 1 as well. I'm looking forward to seeing them in the Champions League. They finished second. They actually pushed PSG closer than they had really any right to. They finish ahead of Marseille and Monaco, who have much bigger budgets than them this season. But yeah, I think Luton Town, their story comes out on top for me.
Very nice. Taylor, who comes out on top for you in the overachiever category?
It was going to be Graham until he failed to mention the words Ethan and Horvath in summarizing Luton Town's season. So instead, I'm going to go with Union Berlin for many of the reasons Joe already outlined. But I talked about it previously with Urs Fischer and how he could be a manager that people could look to if they're maybe trying to find somebody new to take over, maybe a larger club. But I hope he doesn't leave, because I think with what he's done with Union, getting them promoted, then first season they qualify for Europa Conference. Next season, they're in Europa League. Now they're in the Champions League. that's just an insane level of consistency improving year on year. And then also now linked with Sergiño Dest. So you really got to love a club that are bringing an American to play in the Champions League. What could possibly go wrong? But Union Berlin were my answer, and I had Brighton as my runner-up.
Union Berlin are going for Sergiño Dest. Was that the story you mentioned?
Yeah, that's the reporting.
Right. Their record signing was Josip Juranovic in January, who's
a right confusing.
Back.
It's confusing. It's been pointed out before that maybe there's a little bit of conflict there. Maybe they want two different right backs for the multiple competitions they will be in.
Oh,
maybe he gets
well
moved to
Dest.
Another position or sold on entirely. Who knows?
Someone's getting inverted. That sounds fun. Taylor, back to you for the underachieving team of the season. I challenge you
Chelsea.
To not... Oh, yeah. That was where I was going to go. You could have gone Leicester as well, to be fair, but Chelsea is the answer, I suppose.
You could have gone Leicester. That is fair. But Chelsea being 30 points worse than they were last season, despite spending all of the money they spent, over, what, £500 million, I believe? Over £600 million, maybe? And to just have so many different resources, none of which really clicked in the attack, to have a number of defenders, none of whom really gelled into anything consistent, to have three different managers, none of whom really impressed, although Thomas Tuchel, I continue to think, hard done by, given everything we've seen since he departed. I think it has to be Chelsea for everything off the pitch to start the season, and then everything on the pitch thereafter.
There we go. I'll jump to the next category, chaps, unless you've got a better answer than Chelsea, but
nope.
I don't think you do.
Shall we give some honourable mentions before we move on? I mean, the answer is Chelsea, but below them on the list, you could have, I mean, Spurs, I guess, have a bad season, Valencia. AC Milan are kind of on my honourable mention list just because defending champions and didn't come anywhere close to really defending their title this season. Look like they've scraped top four, which keeps them kind of in the Champions League. But yeah, disappointing season for them. And then the Bundesliga bottom three. Three big clubs potentially dropping out of the Bundesliga this season. So you have Hertha Berlin and Schalke, they've already gone. And then Stuttgart in the relegation playoff place as well. Three kind of traditional, I don't know if you could call them superpowers, but certainly big clubs finishing near the bottom of the Bundesliga. They should really, with the budget they have, be doing a little bit better.
All right, we move on next to the most shocking result of the season. Taylor Rockwell, for me, and this might be shocking for you as a Manchester United fan, the one that stands out is the 7-0... victory for Liverpool at Anfield. Is that? I can't. I'm blanking on anything that was more shocking than that, just because it felt so out of place in the season.
That was my original answer, and I would agree with you. I think that probably is the answer, but there's another category that I'm going to be putting that one into. So I think you're correct, but because I'm trying to find a different answer, I think Manchester City 3, Bayern Munich 0 was the other one that stood out. Just because of the complete and total dominance from Manchester City in that game, a sign of things to come, but also for Bayern, I think I'm correct in saying that was like their first loss in a very long time. I don't think they've lost in the group stages in, I think, 45 years or something along those lines. So for them to come out, and yes, it's Bayern Munich with the new manager. Yes, it's Bayern Munich who aren't as strong as they've been in seasons past, but it's still Bayern Munich. And it's a team that we expect to cause problems and throw different looks and make life difficult. And that they were just sort of completely played off the pitch. And it's only 1-0 until like the 75th minute or something like that. So it's not like all three goals happened in the first 10. It wasn't a Spurs sort of situation. But in this case, just how strong Manchester City looked in that moment and how like lacking in ideas Bayern Munich looked, it was just a very shocking thing for me because it's something I'm not used to, particularly from the Bayern side of things.
Joe, say words into the microphone about the most shocking result of the season now.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I do think that 7-0 Liverpool win is a really good answer. It's probably the right answer, but I'll add another one onto the fire just because. I'm going to go with Man City 4, Real Madrid 0 in the second leg of that Champions League clash in the semifinals. Not that Manchester City probably weren't the better team at the time. I think they were. The first leg ended 1-1 on aggregate. But just for that game to get so lopsided by the end of the match, and City were really, really good in that game. Real Madrid didn't have a ton going for them in the attack. I don't think it's actually the most shocking that 7-0 is really, really good for this category. But to add another, I think that game ended a little bit broader in terms of a scoreline gap than I thought it would.
Okay, Graham, any more results to add to you?
Saudi Arabia beating Argentina at the World Cup, historically the biggest World Cup upset ever due to the difference in ranking. And then obviously Argentina went on to win the whole thing. So that kind of makes it even stranger that their tournament started in that way. And the winning goal was an absolute stunner as well. I had Liverpool beating Man United 7-0 on my list. I also had Brentford beating Man United 4-0 in the second game of the season, where everything felt like it was crumbling for Manchester United. At that point, they were half time of that game, they were 4-0 down. And I actually remember vividly watching that in the kitchen and talking to Lucy, who did not care one bit about what I was saying about this match, but saying to her, like, Erik ten Hag's meant to be this like really good manager, and I actually thought he was going to fix things for Manchester United, but now he might actually be finished, and like, how's this going to pan out for him? So in terms of like how shocked I was, like, that takes some beating, because the Liverpool Man United game, as you say, Ryan, was so unreflective of those two team seasons that I kind of wrote it off as like this anomaly. Whereas the Brentford result really felt like a reflection of where it seemed like Man United were at that time of the season, and obviously things improved for them past that point, thankfully, for Taylor's sake. But yeah, that was a pretty shocking one. I also have to give a mention to Darvo beating Aberdeen. I know no one cares about this, but the biggest Scottish Cup shock ever. It was so shocking that I remember Ryan actually mentioned it on a weekend review once. That's how you know it was notable.
Wow, how out of character for me.
Yeah, I know.
All right, Taylor, to quote the great early 2000s band 9 Days, this is the story of the season category. Sebastian Haller, for me,
yep,
is the story of the season.
Yep.
Given what he overcame and given what he produced. Yep. 9 league goals in 19 games, but still an incredible story for Haller.
It's such a happy story, and then also such a what could have been story. Because if he scores that penalty and things go differently, then it's fully he returns from cancer. He and then scores the winning goal, and they win the Bundesliga. And just that we don't get that final beautiful little narrative. When they make the movie about it, I'm sure that they'll change the history so that they did in fact win everything. But yes, Haller, the transfer, then the cancer diagnosis. Then overcoming that diagnosis, I believe going into remission, and now being where he is, I think that is a very uplifting story. I would say so too is Napoli winning the Scudetto for very different reasons, but it kind of breaks the Juve and Milan dominance that we've seen of seasons past, and also I think gave us so many compelling storylines and so much to enjoy. I think we were all pretty sad that they didn't go further in the Champions League on top of that, but for them winning the Scudetto, I think they're also on the list.
Very good. Graham, any other noms?
Haller, I think, is probably the answer. I had, in my honourable mentions, though, Napoli winning the Scudetto, Morocco's run to the World Cup semi-finals, Messi winning the World Cup as well. I know it wasn't really an upset. I mean, they were one of the favourites, Argentina, but nonetheless, it was kind of a career-defining moment for arguably the greatest player of all time. So that was certainly a compelling story. Luton Town's promotion, Wrexham's promotion as well, I think, was and the whole kind of National League title race was an excellent story. And of course, Scotland beating Spain and Rodri having a wee cry about it after the match.
Graham, I think about that tweet that you sent about Rodri after that game, like, multiple times a week. I can't stop thinking about it.
Which tweet was that?
It was like, cry more, you wet wipe, is what Graham said. And I think about that. I think about that every week.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, wet wipe as an insult is wonderful.
So good, Graham. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Any other stories, Joe, before we move on to the next category?
The last one I've got, and we mentioned it earlier, it's a negative story. It's Chelsea falling apart so quickly and so epically. These don't just have to be positive stories. And if we're talking about pure content, Chelsea has given us gift after gift, episode after episode. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Thomas. We'll talk more about you later, or at least I will. Just so good. Everything was so good with Chelsea this year, and I loved it so much.
Very good. A category there won't be many Chelsea players in next. Best transfer of the season. Graham, is it Kvaradona?
So he's on my list. And I thought maybe the obvious answer here might be similar to player of the season, Erling Haaland, Mr. 52 goals in 51 games or whatever. And actually, what did he cost in the end as well? I mean, I think he's on huge wages, but his transfer
like 50
fee
something million pounds.
Yeah.
How will they ever afford it?
That seems like pretty good value. I think they're paying him like £800,000 a week or something.
Much.
So that's where the real money has gone. But
yeah, but they're only reporting it as like $150,000, so it's fine.
Yeah.
He mows the lawn and we actually don't pay him at all. We just sort of let it even.
We let him paint this white fence and he's totally cool with it. It's fine.
He's actually a complete tax write-off. It's amazing.
Anyway, City were good last season, right? So that's why I'm not putting him in as the best transfer of the season. Yes, he's turned a good team into a better team, but maybe not that much better in the grand scheme of things. Arsenal, however, I think made some pretty massive strides forward, and I think the signing of Oleksandr Zinchenko was key. Now, he had a pretty bad finish to the season, a pretty bad month leading up to the end of the season. I would then argue that all of Arsenal had a pretty bad month leading up to the end of the season. But if we take a broader look at thing, I think the big difference from last season to this season for Arsenal was their ability to sustain pressure and keep their foot on the throat, and having Zinchenko push into central midfield from left back, I think, made this possible. I mentioned Martin Odegaard as one of my players of the season. I don't think he has the season that he has if Zinchenko isn't in this team, because him pushing into central midfield then allows Odegaard to push on, and I think he had his best goal-scoring season ever for Arsenal this year. So I think in terms of making the whole team better, I think Zinchenko is my transfer of the season. It's very painful to put him forward as my transfer of the season, given that he took Kieran Tierney's place in the Arsenal team. But some other honourable mentions: Manuel Akanji for Man City, Pervis Estupiñán, Brighton, Randall Colomwani, Eintracht Frankfurt. Seems like he's not going to be sticking around there for very long. That's how good he is. He's been for Frankfurt this season. And then I'm going to have to qualify this one, right? Andreas Christensen for Barcelona, because I don't think anyone expected him to be a first-team player. I don't think anyone really knew why Barcelona were signing him from Chelsea last summer, but he has been one of their better players this season, and I think going into the new season, if he's fit, he probably starts alongside Ronald Araujo as the kind of centre-back pairing, so he's on my list as well.
Graham, going back to Zinchenko, is the reason you went with him over Gabriel Jesus as a bigger transfer for Arsenal just because of injuries for Jesus?
Yeah, definitely a factor for Gabriel Jesus, and also I think in the matches that Zinchenko has either been in, has either been carrying an injury or maybe has been rested, you've seen a pretty big drop off from Arsenal. I can't really understand why Arteta has been unwilling to use Kieran Tierney, who's sat on this bench for much of the season. But anyway, there's a bigger drop off, I think, when Zinchenko isn't involved to when Gabriel Jesus. I was surprised by when he was injured. Eddie Nketiah kind of kept things going for a while, and Martinelli, and then Leandro Trossard comes in as well, and that Arsenal attack kind of kept things ticking over for a while. So yeah, that's the reason I've gone for him.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I disagree with most of that, but I like the perspective, and I think the injury side makes sense there.
No, well, I love when Joe drops stuff like that.
I got it. I'm not gonna just like lie and say that I agree. That
oh
I agree.
No, it's just it's a very like, well, I'm happy for you sort of.
Yeah,
sort
I was
of
curious.
Comment
I was curious, and Graham answered, and that's what I wanted. I'll just go now.
I love
that
for you. I love that.
I love that for you. Exactly.
Also, we knew that Gabriel Jesus was good, right? We knew that he was good. Zinchenko was, I think, kind of underrated at City.
We knew Zinchenko.
We knew he was good.
Jesus was underrated at City.
Good.
They're both offloaded. All right, we're good. Sorry, I got us sidetracked there. Erling Haaland is my answer to this question. Arsenal did make a lot of really good transfer moves, and in that I'm totally with you on Graham. And Zinchenko, Jesus, in particular, I think both really stood out in that regard. But Erling Haaland, I mean, it's worked out. Like, it was a risk, and I think it was a risk all along. The big talk at the beginning of the season was Darwin Nunez for Liverpool or Erling Haaland for City. Also, sidebar, that feels like it was 1,000 years ago, and I can't believe we ever had that conversation. It's ridiculous. But Erling Haaland, I didn't think it was a given that he was going to make this team better. I didn't think it was a given that he was going to fit in. And we'll talk more about both of those things on tomorrow's show, but it has worked. Like, it was a real gamble, and they are paying him a ton of money, and it worked out. He's been a massive player for them, and they could win the treble. I think Erling Haaland is probably the way to go here.
All right. Taylor, have you given your perspective on this one?
I have not, but Joe just gave it for me. Best transfer of the season is Erling Haaland. Honorable mention to Robert Lewandowski and Kvaratskhelia.
Marvelous stuff. We move now to worst transfer of the season, Taylor. There's probably a few Chelsea nominations here. Calvin Phillips, I guess. Was he this season? He was, wasn't he?
He was.
Right? Yeah.
I found this one really tricky because I think there are... I look forward to being totally wrong on this one, because that is often the case when I say, like, there's not one clear front runner, and then you all immediately have the exact same answer. But I felt like there were a lot of bad transfers. I don't know if there was a worst transfer. Like, Sadio Mane is now maybe near the top of my list just because it felt like it's a good amount of money Bayern spent to bring him in. It felt like he was part of the solution to losing Robert Lewandowski, and now it seems like he could be out this summer. There was the fight with Leroy Sané. There was the discipline that followed. And there was the reporting that everything was all great. And then I think a week later, there was reporting that Sadio Mane is surplus to requirement at Bayern Munich. So I had that on my short list. I had Paul Pogba to Juve, £170,000 per week, an annual salary of £8.8 million, which is still less than he was making at Manchester United. But all that for 6 appearances in total, one of them a start, 108 minutes in total across the Serie A season. Probably not what Juve were going for on a free. And then another one, it's strange to have as a worst transfer, another free transfer. But I think my answer is Jesse Lingard to Nottingham Forest. Remember Jesse Lingard? Remember when he moved to Nottingham Forest and was going to be this really creative midfielder that would... what did you say, Ryan?
Jaylings. I know Jaylings.
Yes, of course. Oh, my mistake. My mistake.
Right, okay.
Yes, that name that I refuse to call him. He moves on a free on a one-year contract, and he had the very successful stint at West Ham. Then he was back with Manchester United for a season. Nothing comes of that, so he's allowed to leave on a free. And I think the idea was he's going to sign for 1 year. He's going to be the playmaker, the string puller for this Nottingham Forest team. And if they stay up, he is then going to command a sizable renewal fee, or maybe somebody even bigger will want to sign him based on what he did and what he achieved. Instead, 17 appearances, only 12 starts, 0 goals, 0 assists. And now my genuine assumption is that he's going to be linked with DC United because of Wayne Rooney and that connection there. Like, I don't know where he ends up, but I think for where the season began and the possibility that was presented to where we are now for Jesse Lingard, who is still only 30, it's pretty shocking to me, and I would have him as the worst transfer of the season.
All right. Graham, who's on your list?
Mark Cucurella is my answer. I covered this a bit in listener questions this week, but I think he takes some beating. I like Cucurella at Brighton, but even then I thought £70 million for him was absolutely nuts. It looks even more nuts now that he has been terrible for Chelsea, and Brighton have since replaced him with Pervis Estupiñán, who is just better than Cucurella, and now Chelsea have a new manager who isn't going to play, or likely isn't going to play, wing-backs, so that has worked out well for Mark Cucurella. Some other Chelsea players. Koulibaly is on my list. I'll hold my hands up and say I was pretty terribly wrong about that one. I thought Koulibaly was going to be a big success for Chelsea, and in the Premier League I had him kind of in that top tier of central defenders. Maybe he'll recover and he'll be a lot better this season, but he had a pretty terrible season. Aubameyang, I think, is also on my list. Signed for Thomas Tuchel to kind of appease Thomas Tuchel and give him a centre forward and a player that he'd worked with before. And then Thomas Tuchel is sacked, I think, 3 days after Aubameyang is signed. Potter then doesn't include Aubameyang in his Premier League squad and has barely featured for Chelsea this season, so he's on my list. Marcus Alonso, actually a player Chelsea got rid of to Barcelona, but liable for a number of goals conceded by Barcelona this season. He can't play in a back four at all, and that is the defensive structure Barcelona have used this season. He can't play at left back, he can't play at centre back. He's only really of any use as a left wing back, and Barcelona don't really play that very often. Richarlison is the final name on my list. Still think he could come good for someone. I've said in the past I'm a fan of Richarlison. I liked him for Brazil at the World Cup. I liked him for Everton, but the fact of the matter is Spurs spent a lot of money on him. He plays in a position where they're already pretty strong, and that money could have been used to strengthen other areas of the team that it has become clear really needed strengthening last summer. So, yeah, he's on my list.
Yeah. The best Richarlison story of the year is him getting Neymar's face tattooed on his back and Neymar demanding
yeah,
he
it is.
It. Yeah.
that tattoo is going in, like, the TSS Hall of Fame, the number of times it's been discussed. It's amazing.
Canon. Yeah. Joe, any other nominations?
So I think Cucurella is the best answer. That is 100% my top answer. The one that I want to make sure we include, because I was wrong about this one, is Antony. 4 goals in 1,800 minutes for Manchester United this year. £80 million fee that they paid to get him from Ajax. I like Antony as a player. I think he's a good player, and I think he is better than he showed this season. But he's never been a proven goal scorer. He's never had more than 10 goals in a league season, and that's in the Eredivisie. Playing for a stacked Ajax team where the scoring is so spread did make that, you know, a little bit different. But man, the production is just not even close to good enough for him with what Manchester United paid. I put far more of it on the club than I do on the player in this particular situation, because expectations were really, really high given that fee. That move did not work out.
It did not indeed.
I think he's been pretty good. Like, I know they paid £80 million for him, and yes, he is, like, raw. He's rawer than I expected, yeah. Right? That's well, I'll agree. Yeah. He was closer to being the final product when Man United signed him. But, he has started a bunch of games, and I know that isn't necessarily a sign of success, but certainly in the last kind of 2 months, and I've watched a lot of Manchester United, he's been coming on a game. Like,
that's
he's great. So...
Is the issue not the price, though, Graham? Is the issue not that it's... wasn't
yeah,
worth
they overpaid for him. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. I just struggle to put him on a list of like worst transfers of the season because I still think he's going to be an important player for Manchester United. I don't think they're going into this summer looking to replace him.
I agree with that. And Graham, you've certainly seen more Manchester United over the last couple of months than I have. For me, it's just looking at the production relative to the fee and even how much time he spent on the field. Like 4 goals in 1,800 minutes is not a very good goal scoring rate. But if he can improve, and he's still young, right? Like there's still lots of time for this to change. But if you're talking about return on value, I'm not sure Anthony ranks very highly. I mean, he's close to the bottom of my list in this category for a reason. But I hope we see more of him because as far as players I actually enjoy watching, he is very, very close to the top of that list.
It would be interesting if we made this. I know this doesn't quite make sense, but bear with me. It'd be interesting if we made this like a over the course of 2 years award because I think Joe and Graham are both correct, in my opinion, that he has been disappointing from a he is not the polished, the final product standpoint. At the same time, I agree. I think that there is development between the beginning of the season and the end, and I think next season will be the critical season for him. Does he continue to be this frustrating player who always comes close, or does he turn it on and find that form and find some of those goals that I hope he can find? Joe, he reminds me of a player I used to play with who would always talk about how, like, yeah, I didn't score, but I hit the post twice, and that's the same thing. He would always want credit for hitting the post or coming close, and man, does Anthony do that a lot. So I think there is justification for having him on your list, but I think I agree with Graham overall.
I think the discussion around him right now is quite similar to the discussion a lot of people were having about Jack Grealish last summer, where
there
City
overpaid
for him. He wasn't quite perfect for that Man City team. People were talking about his productivity, but obviously this season he's flourished and become kind of the perfect Man City player. So that is the, and obviously that's the difficult bit, but that's the bit that Anthony needs to do now.
And then one other thing for me, like, because I saw this guy on everybody's, on a lot of worst transfers of the season list. And I would say, like, biggest bummer of a transfer or saddest transfer is Arthur Melo to Liverpool. That gets talked about a lot because he never plays. Yeah, I don't think he plays a single minute and is now going back. He was on loan. But when I read a little deeper a while back, because I was trying to figure out what his deal was, because I remembered him being part of that Pjanic swap, and I wasn't really sure if that was about his quality or what. And from everything I read, it's basically that he came in and wasn't fit enough because he hadn't played and wasn't in form. So he wasn't fit enough or sharp enough to play in the Liverpool system, and that was immediately clear. Klopp and staff identify this and tell him, it's going to take a ton of work, you're going to have to train harder, and he does. You're going to have to play with the U21s, and he does. And he does a lot of the work to get into that form to be at the level where he could be a contributor for Liverpool, and to my understanding, gets close to it and then has an injury again and basically has to miss another month and loses that form. And by the time he recovers, it's just sort of not a time where he's going to be able to play. Players come back. They can't really roll the dice on getting him in there anymore. And so it just doesn't work out. But it was another one that, like, what could have been in my mind of if it's a player working really hard, becoming a leader, going down to the youth level, playing with the U21s, happily playing with them and coaching and being instructive in how to play. And so I think it's a player who then leaves Liverpool, but like with Jurgen Klopp, I'm guessing doesn't leave as a really frustrating thing and a big mistake, is more of a what might have been sort of player. So I had him on my like biggest bummer transfer, not quite worst transfer though.
All right, good stuff. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we close out the award ceremony. Back shortly.
Hey folks, this is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our annual awards. Some, Joe, are calling this the biggest award of the night. It's very exciting. We get to USMNT Player of the Season. Balogun goal.
Balogun goal is very tempting. I didn't go with Balogun, even though he was very clearly the highest performing U.S. player.
The biggest upset of the night.
The thing is, I wasn't watching him this season as a USMNT player. Like, and this is just sort of like a mental block, I guess, but I wanted to use this to give credit for a player that was involved with the team and was at the World Cup and all those things throughout the season. Balogun, I'm optimistic, will be winning this award from this point forward, but I want to give Tim Ream and Jedi Robinson credit. Yeah. And I have them as just one player. Balogun, yes, I think we've talked about him enough. Jedi works really hard up that left side, played 3,000 minutes in the Premier League with Fulham this year, their starting left back. And then Tim Ream, you know, helped this team finish 10th. He played just about 2,900 minutes, missed the last stretch of the season with a broken arm, but was an every game player for this team in their return to the Premier League. Then you also get the anecdote about Pep Guardiola walking up to Ream after they play City and praising him and saying, like, hey, if you were 24 instead of 34, you'd be playing for me. And then Ream goes like, dude, I'm not even 34, I'm 35. And that's kind of how that interaction ended. It's a good bit. And I think that moment shows like how good Tim Ream was this year. Playing the ball out of the back. He has athletic limitations, yes. But man, a really good season for both of those players. A good season for Fulham. And I wanted to make sure that they got some credit. Because in general, this was a really down year for USMNT players in Europe. Like Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, Tim Weah, Yunus Musah, Luka Dele. I mean, you can almost go through the list of core USMNT players in Europe, and like not many of them had good seasons. And so Tim Ream and Jedi Robinson certainly did.
For people who cannot see, because obviously the video is not being published, Balogun got up from his seat and started walking towards the podium when Ryan announced this category and had to do an abrupt sort of U-turn, pretending like he was talking to somebody else, and went back and sat down. A shocking turn of events here. And yet, Joe, I totally agree with you. I actually had Robinson and then Ream, but I think you've talked me into Ream being the USMNT player of the season, because I sort of forgot that he was not really in the conversation for going to the World Cup for a good long while. And I think if he doesn't have the start to the season he had, because, you know, the midseason break, I don't think he's in the conversation, or like certainly not starting at a World Cup. And so I think for him to start as strongly as he did, play in a World Cup, and then finish as strongly as he did, I think it's Tim Ream just edging out Anthony Robinson. Florin Balogun just furious at his table now.
Graham, are you going to make him more furious?
Yeah, because I have also picked Tim Ream. The only thing I would disagree on is I think Tim Ream is quite a bit ahead of the rest of the competition. I think he's been, if you were to ask Fulham fans to name their player of the season, I think a lot of them would come up with Tim Ream as the name they put forward. When you consider how good a season they've had and how many good players that they have, that's quite impressive. Some honourable mentions. I mean, I have to mention CCV, don't I? He's had another very good season in Scotland. He's in the running for player of the year here. Ricardo Pepe. I mean, he has had a better season than people expected. I think he scored 12 goals for Groningen. Seems to be on the verge of a move to Feyenoord, the last that I read. Obviously, Feyenoord being the Dutch champions, so that is a good thing, obviously.
I saw war between Feyenoord and PSV over who gets to sign him. I don't hate that struggle.
Ernie Stewart's fingers are in the pot, baby. Ernie Stewart.
Yeah, so there we go. Like, I can't say I've watched a great deal of Ricardo Pepi this season, but if those clubs are interested in him, it says that he's done well in the Eredivisie this year. I, like Joe, I kind of struggled for names, so I've also got Malik Tillman in there. He had bad patches in the season. I don't think Rangers are going to sign him permanently, but he was in the team of the year in the Scottish Premiership here, so he was on my honourable mention list as well.
Good stuff. All right, a couple more categories to run through before we head out of here. Taylor, worst performance of the season. When I mentioned the 7-0 Liverpool Man United game earlier, I presume you were keeping your powder dry for this category.
I was. Yes. 1-0 at halftime, 7-0 final. That second half was real, real bad, no good. Did not enjoy. And I think it's a credit to Liverpool that they piled on. And I think that will probably be the highlight of what was otherwise not the best season for Liverpool. For Manchester United, another result to try to forget. Man, did they have some bad ones this season. Some very good ones and then some very bad ones. I think this was the worst of those performances. So worst performance of the season for me.
All right, Joe Graham, any movement on that one, Joe?
Yes, so I went for an individual player in this category, and I've got Wout Faes for Leicester City. I remember, I don't know if Ryan was on this show. I think it was a weekend review. I remember distinctly Graham and Taylor and I talking about this. Two own goals against Liverpool back in December. Yeah. The first one comes 38 minutes in, him trying to clear a Trent Alexander-Arnold cross, which looked like it was heading into Danny Ward's gloves, and instead Faes like slices the ball over the keeper and into the back of the net. And then 7 minutes later, this one is my favorite. It's Darwin Nunez who hits the post. And Faes doesn't have much time to react, but he goes and basically tries to clear the ball over the bar, but just ends up booting it into the back of his own net. It's so funny. It's super unfortunate and not something that really is going to happen for a player every single game. But I just can't help but laugh. Like, I hope eventually that Wout Faes gets to the point in his life where he can laugh about this, because it is just so horrendous. That's my nomination.
Good stuff. Graham?
So I didn't have Wout Faes. I think he might be the answer. But I also had Gregor Kobel against Bayern Munich for Borussia Dortmund. Just because, obviously, there was a greater ripple effect where, yes, he makes the absolute howler, but it completely shook Dortmund in that kind of season-defining match. And obviously, the way that the season finishes, the title race finishes in the Bundesliga, even if Dortmund pick up a point in that game, they win the title. So it was pretty consequential, that performance.
Indeed. A couple more to go, Graham. We come back to you for Kit of the Season.
So Venezia home, the black one. I sometimes think that the Venezia stuff is overhyped, but when I look back at some of this, like people go nuts for it, and some of it I just don't think warrants the attention. But
Graham
this
just described Gianluca Busio in like four words.
There we go. That's what I was going for, Joe. I was using an analogy for both there. But yeah, the black home shirt for them this season was pretty special. I regret not buying it in long sleeve. I'm still looking for one of those on Classic Football shirts. They go very quickly. Honorable mentions, Mexico away was for the World Cup. Japan away, very good. Ajax away, a lot of away shirts here now, I'm realising. Juventus's home shirt, right? I hated that when that was released last summer. And I kind of learned to really like it. It's kind of got tire marks as the stripes. I quite like it now. And then finally, Scotland's 150th anniversary home shirt. I have to mention that one.
That is a good one, Graham. Good one to end on there. Any other takers? Taylor, anything else kit-wise?
I liked Arsenal's away. The black sort of multi-pattern one I thought was pretty good. I always like a full black kit. And I thought Barcelona's home shirt was nice. I think because I have disliked so many of their kits recently, I thought it was just kind of like a nice return to form, simple, but still had some innovative things and some interesting flourishes. So Barca on there for me too.
Joe, any other takers?
Yeah, I've got the Ajax, the sort of dark blue with red and gold trim. It's really, really good. Realistically, just whatever Graham says is right, because Graham knows it.
Yeah,
he does indeed.
No, Graham, where are you on the did you see the black and white Vasco da Gama?
Yeah, I didn't. That is very good. It's the one with the kind of red cross on the chest, isn't it? Yeah, that's very good. I did buy a Vasco da Gama shirt this
of
season, but that wasn't one of them.
That's got to be on the bingo card. That's got to be on the bingo card.
A couple more categories very quickly. Best TV coverage. I'm going to go ahead and nominate CBS, who I think have really climbed the rankings this season, particularly with their coverage. Taylor, it's the controlled chaos is the phrase we've used before. I think it's reached a new level, and I think they've really sort of leaned into it, and it's just really good, the energy they have on Champions League night. It's not, I know sometimes it is a bit much, but I think it's done really well. And I was really bowled over by that Romelu Lukaku interview they did on the field after the Champions League semi-final a few weeks back, where it was basically Thierry Henry giving Lukaku therapy live on air. It was just wonderful that they were in. And it was the controlled chaos that basically led to be able to have that moment as well.
Yes. No argument. I giggled a little bit because I swear it sounded like you said CVS. And I was like, Ryan loves a big receipt. But yes, CBS, their coverage was great. Especially there's the Lukaku moment, as you mentioned. But then there's the other lighter moments, like when they did trivia, I think midway through the Champions League campaign. And it was really clear that the producers were trying to trick the contestants into answering themselves, which Micah Richards did twice, or Thierry Henry did twice. I think they kept trying to trick them. So just little things like that where they're all sort of, again, controlled chaos, okay with looking silly at times. I think that's the very good blend that CBS has found.
Very good. Well done, CBS. And we love that you do morning footy every day. Commitment to the game there. All right. Funniest moment is our final category, Graham. Is it going to be Jack Grealish doing an F-bomb live on CBS? Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Tell us.
It wasn't on my list, and man, I'm not sure I'm going to have time to go through my list because there was a lot of funny moments. But I think top of the list is maybe, and it's kind of a hybrid funniest moment, but also most kind of jaw-dropping moment, and that is Antonio Conte's press conference after the defeat to Spurs. So I remember exactly how I was made aware of that press conference. I saw it on Twitter. I saw it from like one of these Spurs aggregator accounts. And you know the way those accounts are, I thought, there's no way he's actually said that, or they're paraphrasing or something. No, he said all the things that they tweeted out and more. It was like an Arsenal fan had become Tottenham manager for a press conference, and he just laid into Tottenham Hotspur. It was very funny to me as a non-Tottenham fan. So that's on my list. I also had the Saudi Arabian fans celebrating the win over Argentina. There's a video of like a guy taking the door off its hinges in celebration, which was very funny. Pep Guardiola revealing his fascination with Julia Roberts and his pain that she's actually a Man United fan. Duncan Ferguson becoming Forest Green Rovers manager and having to punt vegan croissants when we all know that he eats wild animals for breakfast. Richard Keys saying Frank Lampard would be a better Chelsea boss than Julian Nagelsmann, only for Frank Lampard to lose pretty much every single Chelsea match as interim manager. All those scooters behind the Napoli bus after they arrived back from Turin after beating Juventus. Erling Haaland's impression of John Stones. Very funny. Look it out if you've not seen it. This is a very recent one. Phil Neville blasting a reporter for interrupting him in a press conference only to ask him what the question was because he forgot it.
That was great.
So good. And then finally, Daryl Dickey admitting he'd been using dishwasher tablets to wash his clothes in England, thinking they were for his washing machine instead. Very funny.
That's good. So good brand recognition from Daryl Dickey there. That's very exhaustive. Joe, anything to add to that?
The only one I'll add, Graham, that was amazing, is Handshake Gate, which also feels like it was 1,000 years ago. Yep. Thomas Tuchel, Antonio Conte. Conte comes in hot, I'll admit that. Then Tuchel holds on, like he keeps the grip. They sort of spin around, little dance action going on. Then they square up. Then Tuchel, well, I didn't remember this part in watching it again as prepping for this episode. Tuchel points to his eyes, like with the classic I'm watching you moment, like the teacher to the bad kid in school. It's Taylor, go, please. Taylor's bursting at the seams.
See, I see it the other way around, because I'm right with you. Like, across the board, kind of forgot this, except Graham always mentions it as being like, can you believe that this happened this season? And I sort of forget it every single time. Watching it again, I think it's that Antonio Conte, when he shakes his hand, does not make eye contact with Thomas Tuchel. It just does the handshake walk by. And Tuchel, I think, pulls
Tuchel
him back and is saying,
respect.
Like, look me in the eyes.
Yeah.
Which is way better and way more hilarious.
So
but also, Thomas Tuchel being like, having a go at Antonio Conte and watching it again, I remember at the time being like, he will rip you to pieces, Thomas Tuchel. What are you doing? You're like confronting a caged lion and making eye contact with it. Watching it again, I think Tuchel would have won. I think Antonio Conte has to like try to square up. But the idea that Thomas Tuchel like pulled Antonio Conte around and said, look me in the eyes, is amazing and hilarious and incredible all at once. So, Joe, I'm glad you had that too.
It's so good. Tuchel, in watching it back, you're right. He's kind of a lanky legend. Like, he's a guy, it's like, all right, he's got the reach in terms of a jab or let me be a little left hook. Like, he's got some. The only thing is, it's a soccer scrum, so of course there was no hands thrown. Like, soccer doesn't do fights. Nobody does anything in those moments. But it was a funny moment, and then Jesse Marsh cracked some bits about it back when he was still Leeds manager, I think, the next week. Just lots of good stuff coming from that. It feels like it was a long time ago, but so, so good.
Taylor, any more? Maybe Big Sam saying he was better than Pep and Arteta and everybody else, and then went on to relegate his team?
Oh, Big Sam. That's not funny. That's just sad. Yeah, I had Tuchel and I had the Julia Roberts quote from Pep Guardiola as being the most bizarre but hilarious. Pep occasionally does press conferences where I think he might be on mushrooms or some sort of mood stabilizer. I don't know. But he occasionally just goes off on one, sometimes very angrily and sometimes about how Julia Roberts should have loved him more. So I think that's another memorable moment for the season that made me chuckle.
Wonderful stuff. And a memorable season indeed, which is completely over. No more significant games to cover this season, as we've established at the start of the show. Excellent awards ceremonying, everybody. Taylor, you can remove your tuxedo pants now. I see they're chafing you. Thank you very much, Taylor, for your contributions here.
Ryan's about to get canceled on this show, just instructing people to take their pants off. I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, in hindsight, I withdraw my statement. Graham, a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey. I'll keep my pants on.
And Joe, you do what you will with your pants.
I don't think
man.
They were ever on. I think Joe established that.
That's yeah, right. Well, yeah, let's... goodbye. Good work, Ryan. Good stuff.
Thanks, listener. Great ending. We'll be back on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye!